Thank you. Welcome everyone to today on 24th of September 2014, the call on the WHOIS Review Team Internationalized Registration Data Expert Working Group. We will be using the document in Google Doc, going through the various changes and discussions and people's comments. So with that, over to you, Jim.
Okay, thanks. I want to do a quick roll call here. So we have Jody, Nishit, Naoki, Takao, and myself, Jim, along with Steve. Okay, so thanks to everyone for joining us. I know our progress seems a little bit slow at the moment. We seem to be stepping through in sort of chunks. But we are nearing completion, and this is a good thing. What I was going to propose to do for today is just to step through, you know, from the top, moving down through a few things, and, you know, close a couple of comments, you know, maybe ask a couple of questions here that we have going on, but only down as far as I've done my, you know, detailed review here, at least from my point of view, looking for comments in here that we can deal with. And then we'll end, you know, perhaps a bit early, but, you know, I think that's pretty much where we are at the moment. We need people to look at the document and in the suggesting mode, you know, make changes in there or add comments. And, you know, we all just need to go through and try to resolve these things. So that's my plan for today. I apologize for not publishing that agenda in advance, but let me just open up and see if anyone has any other suggestions, other things you'd rather do, a different way of doing this. Okay. Maybe something did occur to me though to add to this is we did have a bit of discussion going on the mailing list. In particular, Jody had a question which I responded to. Did you get a chance to see that, Jody? Would it be good to just take a moment and touch on that quickly?
I think so. I just got done reading it, actually. And, yeah, from your comments, I mean, I think it would be important for us to be able to state that no working list exists at this time, you know, to be able to, what I want to say, for registries or registrars to validate a script with a region, and that, you know, that's kind of a requirement before we could actually set this as a requirement in the same way that you mentioned, you know, that we have language and script tables. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does to me. You know, I agree with you. I think that you and I are on the same page here. I'm fully, you know, aware of the fact that the idea that we want the address information to be, you know, in a relevant script and language is essentially problematic in today's environment. I think that, yeah, the idea here is to expand the text, and this hasn't been done yet, so there's some work to be done here. And I have an action to do that in a comment here to simply explain why this is a good thing. And then equally have to explain, well, why we can't quite do it yet. What are the things that have to happen before this can be a valid requirement?
That sounds good to me. You know, these are the things that would have to happen before this can be validated or a valid requirement. I mean, otherwise it's an idea, but it does need that list.
Right.
This is Steve. We could add Jody's text in the section of the document that talks about the considerations section. So in particular, I was thinking in section 3.3.2. Currently, it says the use of language and script tags for all registration data requires that a standard list and definition of languages and scripts exist. So we could add Jody's text in the email to here, talk about, you know, ISO and the need for that list to exist prior to any of these can be implemented. That, how does that sound?
I think that's fine. I think we should absolutely put that in there. It certainly, I mean, yeah, we'll editorialize it later to make sure it fits, since I have some other cleanup to do in some earlier sections and want to make sure that all of this fits together. But yes, please do that.
Yeah. Are you okay with you? Is that okay with you, Jody?
Yeah, it is. I guess I had one other comment, and I'm not sure that this is called out in here, and that's why I'm asking. So we're recommending that it needs to be in the localized script of the region, or was there a secondary text that it could be in? Did we say that it could also be in English?
From my point of view, okay, speaking just as an individual here, I don't think that's for us to say. I think that it's the Translation and Transliteration Working Group that would speak to that issue. So we could make reference to the fact, I guess, taking a step back here, maybe we could make reference to the fact that this other working group is speaking to this question, and it might affect this recommendation.
All right.
I mean, I guess I'm not really sure. I'm not sure which one of us is going to finish first, us or them, because they're getting pretty close to being done also. And it turns out that they're getting pretty close to being done, and they're actually not going to recommend the use of a single language or script. So assuming they continue down that path, and, you know, since they're not done yet, there's always the possibility of change, there won't be such a fallback position anyway. But,
okay.
You know, we could still speak to the issue. I don't see any problem with that. I mean, I suppose we can find a way to more generically speak to the question of whether or not there's a fallback, or, you know, some registries might want to consider that and do that for themselves, even if there's not a uniform requirement of all registries. Would that be something you'd like to see?
I think so, Jim. I believe that there needs to be some kind of fallback as far as, you know, if you have somebody who happens to be living in France, and, you know, I've spoken to Takao and a couple other people saying that, you know, they're able to, you know, send email to people in Russia that has a completely English address on it, or into France or into Japan. Yes, I'm trying to be respectful of the people that are moved to these countries. Well, I guess I'll take that back. That have moved there, and well, I guess that my train of thought isn't quite there yet. Never mind.
No, I know how you feel, because I've been struggling with this business here for a while myself to try and logically have a straightforward train of thought, as you call it, and it's not easy. You know, if I were to try down this path, I think what's the issue which I always bump up against is we've got this user capability principle. And so on the one hand, you know, we're saying that someone should not have to use a language or script that's not already, you know, typical for them, right? It's what they're most skilled at. So if I'm a Russian who moves to France, you know, that user capability principle, the first thing that it would seem to say is that I ought to be able to enter all of my contact information in Russian, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and so that feels like the right thing just from that point of view. But what I bump up against in my mind, at least, the direction that I come from, is I then say, but wait a minute. You have to think about this from the point of view of what's required by the postal regulations. What are the postal requirements? right? I mean, the purpose of the address is to deliver a physical letter or, you know, postal object of some sort. And therefore, it has to be operationally useful in that context. And to me, this becomes the one situation where that has to be the requirement, that the address should be in French, not in Russian. And then you get to ask the question, well, if I'm Russian, how am I going to write a French address? And my only response to that from a practical point of view is, well, I ought to be able to copy and paste. I mean, surely I can at least do that much, because it would simply be wrong to write my French address in Russian. But I know it doesn't feel elegant at all, but I'm not sure what else to do, know what else to say. I guess that's kind of where I'm falling. Any reactions?
I would agree. I mean, we should allow the user to be able to put it into whatever script that they are most comfortable with. But as you said, it doesn't make sense to put a Russian address, translate French into Russian, when I'm living in France for the address.
Yeah, it's the validation requirements. It's the overall validation requirements that registrars are subject to that comes to bear in this context. So there's two things. It's postal regulations. It's the validation requirements on that registrars are going to be subject to. And in particular, it's the operational validation of the address. You know, how do you make all those things work and play together?
Mm-hmm. And the biggest one that I see is the operational validation of the address, as we've have multiple issues with that as a registrar.
Yes. So, okay. Anything else, or can we jump to the document here?
I'm ready to jump to the document, if anyone else is.
Any comments from anyone else? Okay. So, just starting at the top of the document and scrolling down, I see a couple of editorial things from Steve in the first paragraph here of the executive summary, and I'm inclined to just accept those. Steve has been good. We should all, for changes that anyone make, just a reminder to use this suggesting mode, which I so very much like in Google Docs now, got to say. But if no one objects, I think we'll just accept those changes up there at the top. Steve's changes. And then I had a comment here to check a reference, and I think that that's fine. I'm not quite sure what I was thinking about when I had selected this. I wanted to check the phrase that's used in the solution study, Steve, but I think this is fine because I'm pretty sure you took all of this text and these definitions right from there, right?
Regarding internationalization versus localization?
Correct.
I think this is what we define in this document.
We made these definitions. We didn't take them from their solutions document.
Which solutions? The solution study?
Yeah, the solution study, the transformation solution study that was done.
Okay.
I mean, that's okay. I actually thought the definitions came from there, but that's fine if they didn't.
I can quickly check.
Okay. While you do that, we'll keep moving down here. So there are a couple of deletions here as we get to the table, which I think are fine, which we can accept. I added text this morning in here about the languages and scripts appropriate for the region in which the address is located as we get to the top of page 6 here, for the address of the registrar and technical administrative contact. one of the things I want to call out is when I was fixing up this, and we'll have to fix it up later on in the text too, and then add some text to explain this, I didn't say a language or script. I said in languages and scripts appropriate for the region. I was phrasing this in a way to explicitly allow for mixed script in the address. And we'll have to talk about that more in the actual text later on down below. But I wanted to call that out for folks. And
well, so Jim, I think that also gives it the ability to be able to say in regions, you know, saying appropriate for the region could mean that there's a fallback for a script or for the postal address for the language that it's in.
Yes, I agree.
I think it's good.
Yeah, so certainly it does allow that interpretation too, and so we can have some discussion about that later. Okay. A new question has occurred to me as I was looking at this table here. So the next comment down from me is I had highlighted the postal code of the registrant, the technical administrative contact, and it suddenly jumped out at me. I don't know why I didn't notice this before, but why isn't the postal code just part of the address? Why is that a separate line item?
Jim, I can answer that. In the table, there are three columns. One is the data category and example data elements. So here, the previous row, address of registrant, this address is mostly very unstructured, free-form text, address 1, address 2, city, state, and province. So those are kind of more, you know, subject to language and script. Where postal code, I mean, you could, it seems to be more or less standardized around the world. There are sets of postal codes that people will use. So that's, in some way, is categorically different from the address 1, address 2, city and state, where you are to enter more free-form text. That's when I was developing this table. I sought to separate those because the latter one is easier to standardize. The former one is going to be much more challenging. So that's the reason.
So what occurs to me in listening to that is I get what you're saying. So a postal code actually has a defined value. I mean, there are essentially, someone gets to specify what the postal code is and what it can be. So it occurs to me that that's a big, well, you know, I don't know. No, I take it back. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll finish my thought first so that other folks can get an opinion from other folks here. There's essentially what I think I heard you saying, my interpretation of what you were saying is that postal code, there are well-defined tables of postal codes. And so to a first order, where I was going is, oh, well, then we should simply reference the fact that, you know, there are tables of these things and that's where the postal code comes from. And so it might be free-form text from the point of view of a principal, but in fact its actual scope is limited by whatever the postal authority says it should be. But the reason why I hesitated, so that's where I was going to stop, and then I hesitated as I started to say that because it suddenly occurred to me that, oh, but wait a minute, postal rules actually say what addresses are allowed to look like too. And so, you know, I mean, in some regions of the world have real, you know, databases of these things so that you can actually do syntactic validation, you know, mostly conveniently in many parts of the world. In fact, you know, even the U.S. Postal Service, for example, you can enter an address without a zip code and it'll tell you the zip code for that address. So you can do mappings between these two sets of tables. So it's not clear to me that these things are categorically different. Anyway, I'll give you a chance to comment to that. I'm interested in what other people think, too. But go ahead, Steve. You want to have a reaction? Or?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, so Nishi, go ahead.
So I... So I just want to add on to what Steve said. So unlike the address part of the registrant, where he would be allowed to enter the address in his or her language, the postal codes, as far as I know, have got some specific format. Like in India, we have got, I think, six letter numeric value. So each of the country has got a definite format to specify the postal code.
So Nishit, that said, you know, shouldn't we say something more than freeform text here?
I don't know. I have just Googled it on, I found it on Wikipedia, and I'll just put up the link.
I think what I'm struggling with in my mind is, I guess I accept the idea that it's categorically different than the address, but if it is, then it feels like somewhere along the way here, we need to make reference to the fact that it has well-defined values, and I don't think we do that in the text. I'm okay, I think, with the requirement being freeform text for this, but we need to explain that freeform text, but, you know, values are restricted by country or something. I mean, shouldn't we say something about that? I'm just not sure what to say, because not everybody has postal codes, right?
Yes, not every country has postal codes. So, for example, you know, if I look at the Wikipedia list of postal codes, they specify area format for each of these postal codes. So, for example, Angola doesn't have postal code. Bahamas doesn't have postal code. There's a few countries that does not have postal code.
And here's a related question that occurred to me in this is lower down, the next set of things we have here is this country country code. And I had asked the question elsewhere, not right here, that shouldn't the country and country code, shouldn't we say something about the fact that these things should be the same? You know, they should certainly be equivalent values, if you will. And now I'm stuck here wondering the similar kind of question about address and postal code. I mean, shouldn't the postal code in some way match the address? I mean, you can, if we call it out separately, don't we have to speak to the issue of whether or not it matches the address? But I think if you make it part of the address, we probably don't really have to say anything about that, because it seems much more implied that it should go together. Am I making sense?
Jim, this is Steve. Isn't that going down the line of validation?
Yes.
Is that, I mean, in the, let me see, in the RAA, what it says. I mean, some of these are specified in the RAA. So let me just pull up that.
Now, that's a good question, sure. Does the RAA speak about whether or not postal code needs to match the address? It probably doesn't. It simply says the address as a whole has to be valid.
So, for example, the RAA says validate that postal address are in the proper format for the applicable country or territory. Validate that postal address fields are consistent across fields. For example, street exists in city exists in state province, city matches postal code, where such information is technically and commercially feasible for the applicable country or territory. So it seems that, I mean, the RAA already addressed some of that. let me pose that into the,
Yeah, we should have a reference to that. That's a good point. So actually, the issue, the question that I'm raising is covered by the RIA because it actually says all four of these things really do need to relate to each other.
Yeah.
There is a relationship here between an address, postcode, and the two country things. I have to say I'm inclined to pull the postcode inside of address. You know, freeform text, appropriate for the region in which it's located, and then underneath that you have the validation requirement that the RIA requires anyway.
Okay.
See, this is Jody. Pulling that validation requirement in from the RIA, I mean, I've always been a little leery of that requirement in the RIA, almost to the point of where it says, you know, where it's commercially feasible, which in most countries it's not commercially feasible to do. So I'm not sure, you know, prolificating that RIA requirement, I think, is difficult. Because it will be difficult for registrars to fulfill that verification or validation.
I take your point, Jody. I didn't mean to overstate what I meant by pull it in. I think that in general, we're going to make a validation reference to just to get at the operational validation of an address. I don't want to pull it in as in to remind people of the requirement. I want to reference the fact that this issue is covered by validation requirements. I guess I'm not sure until I actually start to write the text exactly what this is going to look like. I don't want to pull it in the way that you're speaking about it. I want to pull it in a way just to suggest that these four elements right now, these four categories right now, operationally belong together. And operationally, you know, their validation is done together. And some reference to as defined by the RIA without maybe saying specifically what that is.
I don't have a problem with the postal code being pulled into address, combining those.
Okay, so there's actually two things we're talking about here. I wanted to respond directly to your concern about pulling in the validation requirement, and I wanted to specifically say I'm not trying to pull it in as a hard requirement, just as a soft reference.
Okay.
If that distinction makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
And then separately, I am, you know, bringing up the question of whether or not that postal code should be part of the address. I mean, I accept your point, Steve, that it is at some level categorically different, but on the other hand, I don't see a compelling reason to keep it separate.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm interested in what other people think. So Jody seemed to suggest that, you know, he thought it was okay to pull it together. Does anyone else have any strong feelings about keeping it separate, and can you give any kind of reason as to why or comment as to why?
Jim, I'm okay either way.
I'm just trying to keep our, you know, in some sense, I'm trying to keep the set of requirements sort of minimal, you know. I mean, I don't want to create any more categories of things than we have to.
Right.
And that's the only thing that I'm after here is, so if we can reduce the list by one, I see that as a feature. Unless there's some kind of really good, compelling reason to keep it separate, then I certainly don't object, but I'm not hearing one at the moment, so... Okay. Now, the country and country code things, you know, what compels me to want to keep those separate is just that there is actually documentation, and there's a specific reference for what the values should be there. So it's not freeform text, you know, applicable to a region. those have well-defined values. And in that sense, you know, that at least compels me to want to keep them separate. That's my motivation there.
Okay.
So continuing on down, so we're down here to the identifiers, now into page 7, sort of the middle of page 7, we have a set of identifiers, and we make the comment that there are no internationalized standards because the actual values are assigned by IANA, and Naoki points out that there actually is a type specified for them in the EPP, and wonders if that should be the requirement, if we need to make reference to that. Steve, you asked for discussion, so I'll jump in first. You know, I agree with Naoki. It certainly would be relevant for us. I mean, I think our comment about no internationalized standards is okay, but we should certainly make reference to the fact that there is a type defined for this in EPP.
Okay. Jim, my question is, does that type apply to all identifiers? This is a general category, domain ID, sponsor registrar ID, registrar ID, registrar ID. Most of those are kind of internal objects, internal values assigned by registrar registry. So do all of those comply with the RFC 5730? I mean, a question for Naoki. Yes.
So Naoki, do you know offhand if all of those particular example identifiers are subject to that particular syntax?
Yes. I agree with Steve's opinion. This shield ID type is for registrar ID or registrant ID, but it's not for domain ID.
Okay.
Okay, so it's only used for contact identifiers.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I get it. Then I'll leave the decision to the working group. Yeah.
So in our data model, let's see, what am I thinking? Sorry, just collecting my thoughts for a moment. So from the point of view of this working group, there are no internationalization requirements to specify because these are assigned values. That's the point that we're trying to make here. So they will have whatever, you know, syntax and value is appropriate for the assigning authority. In the data model, though, I think that it would be appropriate to make reference to, you know, at least include a pointer to the fact that there is a syntax defined for this. We should certainly use the syntax that's already defined for it. We certainly shouldn't invent anything new. I guess I have to think about that. I got to go down here and look at this data model. Do you understand the question that I'm raising, anybody?
Basically, what you're talking about is whether this should be limited by, you know, length, minimum length, maximum length, et cetera. Is that right? For the domain ID, the registrar ID, the registrant ID?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's really all the content identifier thing does.
I mean, the IAN idea is supplied. All the others, as you have you've stated, are internal IDs to the registry.
Well, I think the answer, I think part of the answer for Naoki's comment is that I don't think it can be a requirement, not a requirement from this working group in this table. The question that I don't know the answer to yet is it does seem to me that there's probably a way to make reference to this definition in the data model. And I'm just not prepared to speak to that just yet. I have to study this and think about this more.
Probably
in the
schema, this is Steve, in the schema itself, for registrar ID, domain ID, you know, at least put a footnote saying these are internal, these are the current model, the data model just is one example. The schema specified is just one example. A registrar registry could use others, right? Because essentially, it's whatever each registry or registrar internally decide. Right? So we in the data model, we should not give people the impression that, you know, that is the one everybody has to use. But for IANA ID, yeah, I mean, it's well specified the value in the registry, in a IANA registry.
I think I'm okay with that, but I think that if we start down that path, we have to make sure to do that consistently. I mean, where there is a syntactic definition, we should at least reference the fact that it already exists and where it is. I mean, that's sort of the path that I'm headed down, but I want to see what that starts to look like and think about that some more. I don't know, does anyone else have any other comments? Let me add a comment here to that effect, right here in the document.
So we will not change the text in the table, right?
Well, actually, it occurs to me, I think I want to say something a little different in the text because I think that we need to say more than that there's no internationalization standards. What we should say is that the values are assigned by an authority. So we only speak about the IANA ID. We should say where the others come from. So there's no international standards, but the values are assigned by an authority. That's what makes it an identifier, the fact that there's some authority that defines what the identifiers are supposed to be. So the category of identifier, okay, is something which has an authority that manages the values.
Yes, but Jim, those are in section 6.2.4, those explanations. The table is just a summary.
Okay, so then a comment that there's no, all right, so it's probably fine in the table. Yes, you're right.
Yeah,
so the table can just say that there's no international standards to be applied.
Yeah, so specifically in section 6.2.4, it says identifiers are usually registry or registrar internal objects. Therefore, no internationalization standards should be applied.
Right.
And then for IANA ID, it should be the numeric ID assigned by IANA for a given registrar or registry. So there are some text there. Maybe that section needs to be reworded a bit to make it clear.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds good to me. Any comments from anyone else? Okay. So I added a comment there in the document, right there at the table, as a reminder of what to do going forward. Okay. So continuing to scroll down here, now in the middle of page 8, I just found an RFC reference in brackets, and I just wondered, oh, you already deleted them, Steve. Okay. so we're good there. So we can skip past that. Editorial comment about referencing the data model in the executive summary. I think we probably should add a forward reference that's at the bottom of page 8. Okay. Continuing to scroll through, unless someone wants to jump and speak up, as we get into the background on page 9, we have some editorial notes from Steve, and I'm okay with those unless someone wants to speak up. And Steve, moving on down to the bottom of page 10, Steve made some changes to some text there, and I'm okay with those too. So at the bottom of page 11, I had highlighted one thing and made a comment that shouldn't these English labels be in Japanese? And Naoki, you were kind enough to change the one label. But I guess what I was looking for was to change all of the labels. So domain name, registrant, name, postal address, and, you know, that word fax down there too. Could we get all of those changed to be Japanese? Would you be able to do all of those, Naoki?
Yes, this is Naoki. I will do that.
Okay, thank you. That would be great.
Jim, I think in terms of the domain name, for example, there are two columns. I'm sorry, two rows. One is the U label, the other is the A label, right? So if you want the label part to be in Japanese, we can simply copy, you know, whatever up there, the first row, the U label.
That makes sense to me. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's just one English, and I mean, this is in JPRS what they input for anything that is English or Latin, they give a English or Latin label. Anything that is Japanese, they give a Japanese label.
Oh, I see what they're doing. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's
well, that certainly makes sense now. That certainly explains what's going on there.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess, though, at least my suggestion, and given that explanation, I mean, folks may want to think differently about this, but, you know, I was, for illustrative purposes, thinking that the localization, you know, should be completely local and localized. And that's why I was suggesting to change the labels. But
okay, so here's
you know.
So here's let's just do some real time editing here. That's why we're looking at it. Is that what you're saying? And let's just quickly.
Yes, that's what I'm suggesting.
Well, who? Google Doc, it's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what to do with web page and fax, but if we can fix those up too. Unless people, you know, don't think that's a good idea.
But there's no web page here, so we can just delete this.
That works too.
Hi, this is Nishit.
Please, Nishit, go ahead.
Nishit?
Yes. What I think this particular localized Japanese record contain two different variants for the same field. One is in localized form and other one is in the English form. So that registrant, which is written in English, example corporation, the above row is the Japanese variant for the same thing. Or this would be good, I think, if we remove the complete row which is representing English, which is written in English to show the whole complete localized who is recording.
Okay, so Nishit, are you suggesting to delete the English version completely? So for example, is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, because that doesn't make sense putting the Japanese same Japanese recording twice. I mean, and that are different. This is what I think. The label for registrant looks similar to the one written in Japanese above. So,
yeah, good point. So what Nish is suggesting is to remove, in this example, remove the English version or the Latin version completely, so that it don't confuse the reader.
That makes sense. Yeah, I agree. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. So is that okay with you, Naoki?
Yes, no problem.
So that's how the latest will look like.
Would you also want to remove the fax label that says FAX?
So I remove, but the first one is telephone, the second one is fax.
Oh, there is no translation, sorry.
Yeah,
Never mind.
That's how I, because I can, with my limited reading of Chinese characters, that's how I understand. Naoki, could you comment?
I think FAX should be there.
So the first one is telephone, right? The second one is fax.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, all right, got it.
One thing, though, to go back to is with the domain name, one of the things that we do have as our own requirement here, so we should leave it here, is although we can take out the second label, we should leave the XN-dash-dash presentation, because we do have as a requirement, right, that submissions can be in the U-label form, but both A-label and U-label should always be output.
Yes.
So we can take out the second label, if you will, but, you know, leave both values. Just line them up. We'll figure that out, too. Yeah, just like that. Okay.
Okay. Would that work?
All right.
All right. Good. Wow, Google Doc is good.
Yeah, we're moving along here, so this is good. And actually, as I look up and see that we are 5 minutes towards the hour here, I'm going to look on down for the moment. I think that's probably a good place to stop, because now that gets us, the next section has some real work to do, and there's still work to be done there. So that brings us up to section 3.3. here, which is in the middle of page 15.
Yep.
So I'm going to actually suggest that we pause here and adjourn at this point. You know, folks should continue to read. Feel free to comment and edit really anywhere in the document. But you know, we have some work to do here in the next sections. I know that I have some actions to do. So, but folks should feel free to add and continue to, you know, suggest things for the document. I think that's it for now. Let's see. Let me just take a quick look at the calendar. Any reason not to meet next week? So not hearing any objections. Let's plan a meeting next week. And we'll probably get one more in on the 8th.
Yeah.
Steve, will you be available on the 8th?
That's on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, that's Wednesday. I mean, I haven't made my travel arrangements yet, but I'm guessing I'll be leaving on Thursday to head towards the ICANN meeting.
Yeah, me too. So we're good.
Okay, so we should be able to get two more meetings in and hopefully continue to progress through the document.
Hopefully we'll
be
done.
Any other comments?
In two meetings.
Yep, we can certainly shoot for that. That would be a good thing. Any other comments, questions, suggestions from anyone? Any other business? Okay, then let me thank everyone and turn it over to you, Steve, to bring us to a close.
Thank you, and the action item is we'll continue to edit this document. I will accept the changes that are accepted today on the call to reflect in the document so people can please continue to work on this, we'll meet next week and the following Wednesday. So with that, the call is adjourned. Operator, could you stop the recording? Thank you.